When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. Today, we are back with episodes 5 and 6, titled The Telltale Heart and Goldbug of the Fall of the House of Usher. It's me, Kathleen, here with Luke, Jimmy, and finally, Paul. He has watched 1 through 6 in order, I hope.
Yes.
And he is here to talk through 5 and 6 with us. You'll know his voice from our previous 4 pods for the Flanagan verse, and we've been missing him, so welcome back, Paul.
Yeah. It's great to be back. I'm sorry it took me so long. Definitely, if anything, this whole thing, experiment, is a testament to how good Flanagan is, because the fact that I thought episode 4 and 5 were episodes 1 and 2, I was like, you know, classic Flanagan throwing us right in the middle of the story. Like, my theories all over the place. I'm like, 2 kids are already dead. We're going to get that backstory. It worked out just so well about how they were all showing the flashbacks, kind of like starting their plan with young Augie and everything. And I was like, oh man, this is crazy. There's storylines all over the place. It was just wild. But in order, it makes so much sense. There were some things that were kind of ruined for me. Like the informant, we'll get to that. But like, that wasn't really a mystery for me, because that was kind of revealed. But there were some things where I'm like, where did, you know, Freddie's wife get the burner phone and all of this? So that it was a mystery to me.
How'd she get all burned up?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I can't wait to get that back. So it was a wild experience, but Flanagan's the man. That's all I got to say.
That hopefully hilarious. It didn't ruin any of your viewing.
Good.
It's not even a backstory. It's a front story. It's like, man, what's that backstory? It's like, dude, just watch episodes 1, 2, and 3.
I know.
Okay, so Paul, I don't think you had a chance to listen to our 3-4 coverage. We're dropping it today, which is Saturday the 14th. I had mentioned during 3 and 4 that while I love the episodes, it's getting a little repetitive for me, right? They told us in the beginning of episode 1, here's the deaths, here's the order, and we know they're coming, right? I thought 5 and 6 were fucking phenomenal. Hanging on is every word again. I thought this spiced it up. It wasn't just like cookie cutter for me. You know who's going to die. It wasn't about that for me. I thought these deaths were fucking awesome. Like, the ASMR of Tam's death was phenomenal. I want to crunch on that mirror like I want to crunch on the Sorcerer's Stone. You know? I loved these episodes. I thought they were fucking awesome. Boys, what did you think?
So I need to be careful what I say here. And I want to jump off what you said, Kathleen, because I think right now this show has cemented itself as number 2. So no matter what I say, I love this show. And I agree. I love these 2 episodes, phenomenal episodes. I'm enjoying the journey. But I do think that it can never go over Hill House as number 1 on this track that it's taking, because while it's awesome, it is still pretty cut and dry, straightforward, especially for someone who we don't have confirmation, but we kind of have confirmation that we guessed in episodes 1 and 2 who Verna is and how the show is kind of going to end. We don't know the ending, and they're going to have a million things that are going to be awesome and surprise us. What's Madeline doing in the basement if it's actually Madeline and all this kind of stuff? But the fact that right away we're guessing Vern is the devil, they made the deal with the devil, and Roddick's going to have everything that he ever wants in life, and it's going to be all taken away from him, and blah, 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 blah. I understand that there is a lot of merit to having a TV show or movie where you know the ending, and it's just about the journey and enjoying how good it is, and I am doing that, but I just don't think the way that this is going, it can be better than Hill House, because that formula will never be top tier for me.
Right.
Yeah. And I agree. I think next episode we can do this conversation once we have seen the ending and be able to actually place it. I mean, I think Midnight Mass was going to be Luke's number 2 until the ending. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
you never know until they stick the ending. It could just turn it on its head for us, or it can like lower it. You never know. But I agree.
It's definitely arrogant of me to say that it's cut and dry before we know the ending, because for all I know, the Verna thing could be not that she's the devil and they're signing a deal with the devil. But it just seems that, especially with this episode, and we'll get into it when they're showing the pictures of all the powerful, wealthy people in the world, that she pretty much is showing that they all signed a deal with the devil with her. Mm-hmm. And that's how they got where they are. But again, we'll talk about it. Luke, Paul, jump in.
Yeah. So just my quick thoughts. You guys pretty much nailed what I had written down to say about this. I was all in on the Verna stuff. I really like that they started up in that. And Freddie's been getting a lot of highlight for him not being his episodes. So that's probably going to be a top two, if not like top three episodes coming up. So I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, it is impossible to jump Haunting of Hill House at this point. I mean, again, I'm copying what Jimmy said, but it's possible, I guess, but I really, really doubt it, just because of just the trajectory of how we're getting there is too, I don't know, like there's not enough twists for what I expect from Flanagan show. And there will be in the finale, as there always is supposed to be. But like, it's just about like, just, you got to just stay in the moment, just watch the cool deaths and let it happen and let Verna blow our minds. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. So yeah, good episodes. Loving the show. Just, I don't think it'll be the best Flanagan show.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We got some high tier conversation about what young Arthur Pym was doing.
Oh yeah.
That's really cool. Want to talk more about that, and totally going on what you guys were saying, you know, hot mama, AKA Verna, seems like, you know, something about like a demon or a devil and making a deal with the devil. And I guess we'll get more into it and see what they're talking about. But there's a whole aspect of like immortality in the background. So I don't know how supernatural it gets, but it feels like there's going to be like a huge penultimate next episode. I'm really, really excited to just finish this one.
All right. So let's break down the episodes then. Jimmy, you got something else to add?
Well, really quick, Luke, I don't mean to cut you off, but since Paul's talking about supernatural, we might as well, let's just get it on the table now. Let's talk about our conversation about episode one, the mother, Eliza, and what we thought and how we were taking it. Originally, Paul, you haven't listened to any of our episodes, right? Or did you listen to episode one and two?
One and two.
So, no, my question to you, Paul, is did you take it like she came back from the dead and it's supernatural, or she was always alive and they buried her alive and then she got out of the grave and did whatever she did on her last breath?
At first, I really did think she died, but I can see where we're going with this because we had a buddy on the Discord and we loved
that
you guys are talking to us.
Yeah. So let me just read this and then we'll get into it. So Alicia Elliott, shout out to you. You hit us up actually this morning, 1:29 a.m. Love it. So you might be doing some spooky Flanagan watching or Edgar Allan Poe reading before bed. But she said she was listening to the first episode and has some info that might help explain Eliza coming back to life in quotes. She says she was accidentally buried alive. That's why the kids apologize that she's trying to strangle Roddy. She's trying to strangle Roddy at first because she thought the kids had buried her alive on purpose. She refused to be embalmed and they didn't take her to a hospital or a funeral home. So when they thought she had died, they buried her in the backyard. This actually used to happen at times in a fear Edgar Allan Poe had. Before embalming became a thing, people were at times accidentally buried alive. He wrote about it in his short story, The Premature Burial. It's not supernatural, but still creepy as hell. Hopefully that info helps. So yeah, I appreciate that. We all appreciate that. It's a something that we did talk about it. Like we said, which one do you think it is? And we went with the supernatural. And it's funny that this is being brought up because I said this show's not going to be great to me if we don't get an answer. And if it's not supernatural, then we won't get an answer. It's just that they buried their mom alive and she came out of the grave. And Paul, I like what you're saying about the rain washing some of the dirt away and it's muddy. And it's not as hard as to break out of it.
Yeah. I understand, and I agree with you completely. I knew that Flanagan was putting other Edgar Allan Poe works into this one. It wasn't just The Fall of the House of Usher, so that makes sense. Mine was more of like a disbelief when they're burying her, like through the panels of the wood that they built. The dirt is like hitting her face, and it's like daytime when they're doing it, and now it's nighttime, and they're asleep, and she's just breaking out, and she's had dirt on her face, and she broke through wood, and she couldn't breathe, and she was weak to begin with, and then she goes and chokes out. Fucking what's his name? It's crazy. Like all of that just seems demonic to me, which is why my brain went there. And it's a Flanagan show. It was right in the beginning. We didn't know what this was going to be yet. So I think that's why my brain went there. But I'm fully on board with this just being like she broke out and that being like an old timey thing that people did because it was like they're fucked up and weirdly, like, I don't know, just not going through the rules of bringing them to a hospital or something. Mm-hmm. Like I like that. It's good. It's good for me.
I'm going to give Kathleen a little break here. So I'll be leading a lot of these buckets, and they're probably going to be a little truncated compared to what she normally does. But, you know, we'll follow the same methodology where we're trying to group together scenes of the same characters. So episode 5 doesn't actually start in modern day with Rod and Augie. Instead, we're going to go back to the infamous night. I think it's 1979, December 31st, back in the bar with Verna, where they met Verna for the first time. I'll open the floor to any conversations you guys want to start here. But the only thing I wanted to point out was it seems like we got Madeline making the deal with Verna here. And I wanted to even go as far to say, like, the signing of the deal was the kiss that she made with Verna. And I hope that's the case, because that's just a cool, unique spin on how you would make a deal with the devil like that. And then the other thing I pointed out, where Verna asked Madeline, would you rather be rich or famous? And she ends up saying rich, and maybe that's part of it as well. But open the conversation there, because this is going to be a night we're going to keep coming back to over the final two episodes.
I don't think that's fair, dude. It's not fair. That wasn't really a, here's a contract, put it on the goddamn table and you're writing your life away, if that's how we're doing it. I mean, she just kind of was asking questions. And we're talking about the fact that we're thinking it's Roddy who ends up signing. So it just seems to me that I agree with you, Luke. Like, I think this is definitely the signing the deal, or at least the start of the contract that they're making. But I feel like there is going to be more revealed after midnight, where it has to get worse. Because, yes, this lady, Verna, as a bartender, would be memorable just because they did something very bad right before they met her. But so far, their conversation with her, it really isn't anything memorable yet, to the point where you're like, 40 years ago, you remember that lady who, I mean, I guess Will Fitzgerald's character, Maddie, would be like, I remember that lady I kissed. But like, otherwise, you know, Roddy would be like, oh, yeah, I freaking got a scotch from this lady.
Well, Madeline, here's what we didn't know, and we weren't sure of, is we weren't sure if Madeline was aware she made a deal with the devil or not. Like, we kind of thought, like, yeah, Madeline, like, signed her whole family away and was just like, peace, let's go, let's get that money. But in the later episodes, I can't tell if it's in 5 or 6, I can't remember, but she's like, well, you were sticking your dick in everyone. Did you fuck her that night too? And like, so Madeline didn't know what happened that night besides what they did. Madeline's unaware of any deal she made, which is very interesting. And I like that much better, almost. Yeah. You know?
Right. And that's why I think it's very, like, it has to get, I don't know, I feel like it has to get worse, or maybe he does something worse.
Well,
when it comes to making the deal,
I think it's not really a deal. It's whenever she like comes up and appears, Verna / Aunt Mama, this is kind of like a test, because you already did something bad and this is the test after it. So like,
that's
even
for the
kids,
though.
Well, right? it could be for anybody. I figured
it's here
because when they come into the bar and they sit down, Rod has stuff all over his hands. And then they're like, chill out, like, everybody make friends, make sure you remember. So I feel like they already did the deed. That's why they're watching out for the cops and everything. They see the cops and they freak out. It's because, you know, something already happened. So my theory, if we want to get into it, I guess we can wait a little bit because there's a better time towards the end of the episode. But
my theory, well, let's
my
wait.
Theory, I'm teasing now, so you have to stay to the end. But it's more... it's not a deal with the devil. Like, this is, you fucked up, you did something bad, and now she's like messing with you and like basically,
like, I'm giving you a chance to repent almost. Yeah. Or like,
yeah, like, do you,
and if you don't, be damned
if you are a good person or a bad person, depending on your answer.
Right.
Okay. Two things.
I like that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Two extra things I have from this scene is just one, this might be stupid of me, I didn't realize they were twins. Makes total sense that they're twins. But we kind of got the reveal in this scene, because obviously, like, it would have been weird if she had two babies with this man out of what, like, you know, cheating and an affair. And then two, Roger kissing somebody else when he's with Annabelle is really interesting. Like, something trajectory wise is off here with Roderick. And I think he had to cheat on Annabelle because of what he did or whatever. Like, I think he's like purposely putting a wedge between the two of them, but we don't know.
What if what they did was bad, was killing Annabelle?
That was my theory.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. I still think it's Rufus, but I like that too. I really do.
I think they killed all of them, including the secretary.
Just started going on a murder spree.
Boom. Included in secretary and that shit too. And to jump forward, well, I'll just talk about it now. We see in the basement of Fortunato, like of the office, Rod's talking to the wall. I feel like they were in Griswold's office, killed him, killed Annabelle too, because she's kind of in the vibe like, you're better than this, stop it. Maybe they like killed her too because she was going to rat. She's a little Annabelle rat. And then
she's like, Allie, good person. Don't
we haven't seen her
thing. I'm gonna tell.
We haven't seen her after that night either. Like, we see her in the flashbacks, but like, we don't know what happened to her. All we know is,
yeah,
that was his first wife. And then after that, Rod had a bunch. So
I like that. That they
could be behind the wall.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Because I feel like Flanagan always does that. He did that with Leo in his episode. He definitely did that in Haunting of Hill House. That was like one of the things, like, was in the wall. It goes, right. Yeah.
Later on, when Morel is watching TV with her daughter, Lenore, they're flipping through Netflix and Gerald's Game is the thing in the background, which is a Mike Flanagan movie. Yeah.
Nice.
And at first they're watching the Pendulum, the version of Edgar Allan Poe. I actually watched that in like middle school or high school.
Nice.
That's the first thing they're watching that ends. And then they go movie or TV and then Gerald's Game comes up.
Sick.
All right, let's move on. There's two quick scenes here. I don't know if there's much to talk about, but this will launch us into the rest of this bucket I have here. We get the modern day Augie and Rod conversation talking about Annabelle. You can say whatever you want there. And then also we get another flash to the first funeral of Perry, Leo, and Camille. And then this is the second time we see the jester ghost when he turns around and sees the jester up top in the church. So still nothing there yet, unless you guys connected something that I didn't. But before we get into other like bigger scenes, like anything with either of those scenes that you guys want to point out?
My thing with these scenes is we get to see the mothers for the first time. So at the funeral, the three mothers for Camille, Leo, and Prospero. And it's interesting because, you know, these kids are kind of fucked up. And Vic later says to the other two that are still alive, like, oh, they tried to fill the daddy hole with spending and greed and money and all this shit. But like, all of these kids didn't meet their father until they were 16, 18, 20, whatever they were. It's like, they almost weren't raised right from the start. You thought like they were raised with greed and they're spoiled rich kids, but they're really not. They were like fully formed people by the time they got the greed. That's like the only thing I had to say, just because, you know, you see the mothers, they're obviously not really talking to Roddy or anything. It's just like more thought provoking on how the kids were raised and why they are the way they are today. You know, it's just made me think of that.
I think that's like, I was kind of getting that as like the theme, like as soon as they, Theo and Napoleon, I called her Theo. Camille and Napoleon, and they're talking about, oh man, he was such a kid, Prospero, when he first found out. And it really would change you if you found out you were an heir to like the biggest, most powerful corporation in the world. So maybe it's just like human nature, because the way Hot Mama Verna keeps talking about it, she keeps talking about like you people as like humans, as the way I was taking it. But maybe she's just talking about ushers.
Yeah.
So anything on the jester? Anybody got any guesses? Because I have nothing.
I got nothing.
Nothing.
I hope it's not.
Like
nothing.
I would have bet money that when he looked back, it was Verna. And the fact that it was a guy, I was like, I don't freaking know what this is.
Yeah.
I can't wait, though.
That has to be a reveal, right? That's not going to be something that just gets like pushed away. I would hope.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. Okay. So let's step into the direct aftermath of the first funeral. And I kind of like this scene just because we get the three surviving kids in a private bar. They all have bodyguards now, which finally, like, come on, like three of your siblings died. Like, I can't believe it took this long. But this is just another good conversation that we get some backstory about, like, Rod only ever married one time. And we already kind of knew that. Tam thinks that Vic is the informant. Like, these interlocking conflicts are still happening. And this is just a good scene just to reset for the kids that are surviving.
Yeah, I was happy to get more Tania Miller this episode. I thought she was fucking phenomenal. Her acting, calling them Frederick and Madeleine. It's all very interesting. I like that they called Annabelle Lee like a legend, the legend of Annabelle Lee. It doesn't seem like even the kids really know her. I think the death of Annabelle, we had already talked about it, but that's going to be a huge thing and a huge turning point as well. But just in general, great acting, very fun. Anything with Freddie was fucking cracking me up. He is a gem. Yeah. He's so good in this. But yeah, it's all
Roderick.
I got, Paul.
It's awesome how it just really showed the rift between how they viewed the other kids. And we already had the line, you know, they call them the bastards, you know, all of them. Not including Vic for some reason. Vic was included in those two, but even later on, we kind of see how like the two, Tammy and Freddie, viewed Vic. It's almost like they didn't even view her as a true sister. So they keep calling each other a family, but it just doesn't seem like a family at all. It seems like they're so at each other's throats.
Definitely not.
They're still like concerned. One of the other ones, the informant, like still going on and everything. So it's weird because they had this scene to like kind of bond and they immediately just explode in each other's face. And they're like, well, that didn't help. And then all dipped.
Even Freddie is like, oh, I thought we were kind of cheers to our dead siblings and hug it out. And they're like, Roder, get the hell out of here.
So I can't, for some reason, it's just not sticking. What is Freddie's wife's name? Maury? Do they call her Maury?
Morel is her name, but Maury is the nickname.
Okay, I don't know why that's not sticking with me, but
it doesn't stick with me either.
Yeah, we could talk more about her later in the second scene she gets. She has the quick scene here where Freddy's being all shady and like making sure he can bring her home.
He's
starting to lose it, and it's actually hilarious watching that play out. But he wants to bring her back home and treat her there. That happens, and then this is the big scene that we get to reveal at the end of the episode with Vic and Allie. They have the fight about rushing the surgery. She's been forging Allie's signatures. That's not the first time forgery has been a theme for this show. So that's happening. They fight. She threatens to break the NDA. And then we black out before we get to see the kill shot. And did you guys know that she was going to be dead off
that? Definitely.
Yeah.
100%.
Murder suicide too was like the newspaper clipping in the beginning. So you knew that was coming.
Definitely. To jump back to Freddie real quick, he's slowly losing it more and more. He was always such a kiss ass in the beginning, but now he's like not listening to anybody. And it's got to be because he went to see, you know, Leo, got the coke. He's been doing coke this whole time. Mm-hmm. And he's just like going more and more in his own head and insane. And the phone is just ruining him trying to like unlock the phone with his wife's burn up face was just so ridiculous. I was like, you are just insane. You're losing it right now. You're not thinking logically at all. So like him taking her home and everything, the setup is just ridiculous. And we didn't see any doctors, and the daughter kind of, you know, that's next episode too. She's kind of saying, hey, we're the specialists. So he is full insane right now.
It's just jealousy. It's pure jealousy, and he's pissed off, and I knew as soon as he wanted to take her home and he's kind of like brushing off any of the doctor's recommendations that I'm like, he's going to kill her. He's going to kill her and torture her.
Would you go as far to say that it's envy?
Could be.
Maybe.
I like
Paul,
that.
We were flirting with the idea of,
well, he would be related to the seven deadly sins.
Oh, I love that.
But they're six, so I don't know how that works, but
yeah.
You could just make Roder the seventh if you really want seven. But problem is they're all greedy.
Yeah, right. Ushers are just greed in general.
So we'll dive more into Freddy like later once we get into the actual scenes. But for I have her as Alessandrine. I know that's not right because it's like Victorine and Alessandra. That's their couple name to me. We'll just call her Allie. This was, and I hate to jump ahead, but the greatest reveal of the series so far to me. Like the way she was set up was so divine, so horror, so gory, so perfect. I was delighted. I was watching it at like 9:30 a.m. just like squealing with delight.
I like her a lot.
Yeah.
Allie, she didn't get enough screen time.
I agree with that. And I think my only issue with this is that they should have given them more home life scenes so we could care about them more. I think that's what's lacking in this series versus Hill House. I'll get on my Hill House soapbox next episode. But in Hill House, you meet these kids. They live through a couple tragedies all at once. And then you grow up with them and you see how these tragedies have fucked their lives up. And you love them so much. Every single one of these damn kids. And as they grow up, you see how flawed they are. And you're just insane. That's how Bly is, like, insanely obsessed with Danny and Jamie and Owen and Hannah and all of them. So, like, I think that's what lacks a little bit in these series. But I would say these series are more just fun. They're more, like, electric and thrilling and just, like, there for the hits. I think that, like, this would hit more if we knew Allie, if we saw that those two were like super in love with each other beforehand. Or was Vic just in it for the heart surgeon? Like, is she doing what Tam did with Bill? Like, you know, just going through a file and I gotta pick one of these heart surgeons to fuck. Allie sounds great, you know, James.
I think that the problem is that, you know, I agree with you 100% that if we know more about Allie, if we know if they're in love or not in love, get more of a background, we can care more about the deaths. But I think the point, too, is that they all suck. Yeah. And you don't want to get to know them more, because if you get to know them more, you're happy they're dying even more.
Yeah.
So it's just, there's nothing to get to know more of except for the fact that they suck. Now, there's some parts of them that can be good, like depending on if you believe Vic loved Allie, but you get scenes like when she calls her on the phone and she says, I will give you anything that you want. Just stop. And you don't know if that's she's first lying and then she just tells the truth, just like Tam. Or if she is telling the truth when she says, I love, and then she just gets down to business because she knows she has to. Like, you could take it either way. I mean, knowing that she actually loved her would have made it hurt more. But I think also you're supposed to think they're all POSs. So I don't know if we need to know that more.
Yeah, I took it as, you know, she really did love her, especially, you know, towards the end when she's like completely gone and insane, and she seems like she cares about her, and I think she does care about her, but like her whole dream goes first.
Something I wanted to bring up with this next scene, because you're saying how like we don't really get to know these characters and like their relationships with each other that deeply. This next scene with Vic, because everything starts to be Vic-centric, of course, it's her episode, and like the beeping starts to become like her version of the black cat, like she's always hearing what's eventually going to kill her, and that really starts in this next scene when Maddie shows up to her place of work. And I bring this up because I thought that Maddie seemed like she was genuinely concerned about Roderick's health. And that was like the first time where I felt like she wasn't being selfish. So I thought this was like, these two episodes were big for Maddie. They gave us a lot about her. And like Kathleen, you brought up earlier, we always thought she was in on the Verna thing, or like she knew about it and she doesn't. So we got a lot of her. And here it seemed like she was being genuine when she was like concerned about the heart transplant working for Roderick. So we'll take that scene. And then the other scene before we return to modern time, which was quick, was Augie and Pim in the courtroom. And Pim just basically gets the delayed trial because of the third death.
Arthur Pym is so cool. Mark Hamill is the man. The way he just like confidently knows that he can get away with anything is just insane. He knows exactly what to do, exactly what to say. I want an Arthur Pym in my life. I feel like I'd be so much farther ahead.
And let's save some of his conversation, because Pym's going to be a center of a later scene. So save a couple of those thoughts. But yeah, he's a beast in the courtroom.
Yeah, he's a beast. But what I'll say is that it's interesting to me, Luke, that you took it that way with Madeline. Like, I still think she's bullshitting and only cares about herself, the future of the Usher business, pretty much. Like, I was the one who brought up last episode, does she even like him at all? Does she care about him at all? And I'm not saying she doesn't. I guarantee that there's some care when she sees that he's not doing well. But, I mean, even the scene later in Goldbug when she slaps him in the face and is like, get your grips. You need to be up there. You need to be here for Tam. We need to show that we're still strong. I took it like she really is still all about Maddie and all about the Usher business.
I could have read it wrong too. So, but how'd you take it, Kathleen?
It could go either way. I was on Luke's side, but now that Jimmy's saying this, later
kind of convinced me out of it.
Yeah. Later in the episode when Madeline, post Vic's death, they're talking about the board seats, right? The board seats, we're going to lose the company. I mean, you're definitely going to lose the company if Roderick dies. You know what I mean? Like, all the kids are dead. You're losing all these board seats. Then Roderick goes. Then you only have Madeline. It's like, she could just be concerned about Roderick's health because he is part of owning the company, right? And running the company. He's the CEO. She's the COO. You know, I think Jimmy's probably right. I think she does care about him, but I think it's more like the business, baby. The green. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even the scene where she talks to Tam and she's like, you know, husbands, man, all they want is kids. They want to bang when they're alive and they want to bang when they're about to die. Like, what the hell's up with these kids talk? Blah, blah, blah. Like, it just seems to me like she is pretty emotionless, pretty tunnel vision. This is what I want. But again, we'll find out more in the next two episodes.
Yeah,
we'll see how Roddy feels about her and why she's in the basement, if she's actually in the basement, and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Could this like all be part of that like test slash deal about how she said, you know, she wants to live forever? And then, you know, Hot Mama in the very beginning in episode 2, talking to Prospero right before his death, she talks about consequences, and there's consequences to seemingly small actions and decisions. So I wouldn't be surprised, because like Madeline's Maddie, if you will, she is the only one that's like not threatened right now. She's the only one that's kind of like feels invincible. I mean, Roddy's going through all this like health stuff as it goes, so he might be gone at the end too. But like, I'm not getting any inclination that Madeline's going to be in trouble or like she's even threatened.
Yeah, and that's the problem that we've been facing for these podcast episodes. The only conclusion we could come up with is that after all these ushers die, Verna comes to Maddie and says, oh, you thought you were going to get away with this. You thought you were going to live forever. And then she kills her because that's the only thing she freaking cares about, living forever and being powerful forever. I mean, going back to what I was saying about the husband thing, she even says like about Bill to Tam, yeah, you feel like you care for a second. And then you're like, nah, it's just seems like she has one care. And going back to the Roderick thing and the shareholders, I feel like the big ending for her is going to be her death.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's, do you have a rebuttal?
I have a feeling that she's not going to die. Would it be weird if this was all part of, and we'll get into it later, but this could be all part of the deal of Madeline, like being or reaching her goal of like immortality, but we'll get to that more next episode.
Yeah, the immortality thing is super interesting. And I just keep getting Westworld vibes. So like, I'm really excited to see how that plays out.
Yeah.
And that's definitely got to be connected to something with what's going on in the basement in present day, which we're gonna transition to that right here. Augie and Rod talk about the informant, and predictably, it was nobody. So good job, Kathleen. You nailed that right off bat. I'm surprised that they kept that running for so long, but it is cool that we got the explicit confirmation that nobody was the rat. And then this is just like following the theme of the other episodes where Rod sees Vic as like a ghost, and she gave her best Nell impression of just like episode one, Hill House, when she starts like opening the mouth, going all gray and stuff. And that shit always creeped me out back then, still creeps me out here.
I loved in the scene where the Vic jump scare changed Roderick's entire demeanor. Like, he was about to blame Augie for the kid's death. Like, none of this would have happened if it wasn't for you. And then the Vic jump scare makes him be like, you know what? Guilt's not really a good thing to live with. You're good. He absolves him from right fucking there. And the line read of drag me, you fucking honey badger was so good. And I don't mean to cut this off, but I wanted to talk about this in the top. Jimmy and Luke know this. All three of us had just seen this article somehow. But so Bruce Greenwood, who plays Roderick, it was all reshoots, which is fucking insane because they had to recast the original actor who was Frank Langella, who just was like just doing fucking harassment on set, and they fired him and they had to reshoot the Greenwood scenes, which is crazy.
Insane.
Like, he's in all the scenes. Like, it's incredible. It's so good. And he is so fucking good in this show. I don't know this other actor, but I couldn't imagine anyone else being Roderick. He's phenomenal.
He's, I agree. The whole show, it feels like almost. He's like the one telling it and explaining it. And to be the one to be so, you got to be so entertaining to be able to like hold that and keep everybody's attention every single episode.
Yep.
He's like whipping out the blade he has like later as Roderick. He is fantastic. If he might be the best performance because we didn't get enough of like Leo and Camille. So right. I might give it to him. So I was shocked to see that article as well. But let's jump into a grouping of scenes here. All of the Griswold related scenes here. When we're going back to young Maddie and young Rod QB1, we find out that she's always been algorithm based. So she wants to sell the idea of this computer company. And she really was doing this just to get FaceTime with Griswold. We can talk about that scene. It has some really good quotes. He gets all sexual harassment-y. So that's just like classic, like Mad Men era kind of stuff. So that all happens. And then we're going to combine that with going back to the apartment and talking about like Annabelle, like that conversation that they end up having, and they're working with Augie. So young Augie's in the room as well. So basically all of that. And then we kind of were hinting at Annabelle's really out on the idea of like doing all this undermining of Griswold, but this was kind of inevitable because we need to watch Roderick become the head of Fortunato. So anything you want to bring up there, we can talk about, because Griswold, again, he's just like a menace and I can't wait to watch him die.
Michael Trucco, right? That's the actor's name.
Yep.
Such a big bad boss in this this show. Like, such a dickhead. Don't get me wrong. He is the epitome of, like, what you would think somebody, this stereotypical head of this company must be, the attitude he must have. And he is always doing this. I mean, I kind of saw this, obviously, early on, but then I went back and then watching, obviously, he did the same exact thing to her brother, young Roderick, when he went in and stormed, like the way that she was talking about, you know, take him off guard and then really disarm him, and just the whole way he viewed the conversation, belittle them a little bit, and then attacking the whole thing. He did that to Roderick, young Roderick, and it worked, and he took the $500. And now, fast forward, she doesn't really fall for it. She kind of sees what he's doing. She's always been the really smart one. And young Madeline, I think I might like her more than the, you know, older Madeline, just because, I don't know, she seems like she's so ambitious.
Yeah, she's a scene stealer. She definitely
she is.
She's pretty too. I mean that's the second thing I noticed. Kathleen, god.
Watch MTV Scream, Paul, season one. That's it, season one.
Oh, she died too as well. No, she doesn't die. But okay. Season two, oh,
she's final girl. She's final girl.
She's Sydney Prescott.
And the last thing I'll say about this flashback, it's weird to see Griswold, Rufy Grizz, as is known by his close friends, and how Roderick literally becomes him. Like, he views him and he feels like he's such a dick and he's all this. He even starts quoting him. You know, Rufus was quoted earlier on saying, like, whenever I tell you to jump, you say how I like say yes, sir. And young Roderick's like, yes, sir. He even does this later on at the family at the table. I think it was the beginning of episode 4. Yeah. And of course, Freddie is the one that goes, yes, sir, because he's like the suck up kiss ass and everything like that. So it's just so, I can't wait to see what happened that really just made Roddy become this terrible person towards the end. So
that's a good place for me to pose this question, because we were harping on that last podcast saying that, well, at least I was specifically, I think you guys were agreeing that it's going to be a make or break moment when we finally see that character development turn into older Roddy, because it hasn't happened. And now I'm thinking about it, like, we're kind of running out of time, because he's like an informant, like almost like a good guy working with Augie right now in this time. So when does he become the bad motherfucker that we see in modern day?
New Year's.
Say that we're right and they kill Rufus, right? That means that I like Rufy. So
Rufy Gringo, Rufy Grizz. I had to think about when you said Rufus. I was like, who's Rufus?
So, say they go and kill the Grizz. If they kill the Grizz, that means that they didn't bust his ass with Augie. And Augie says, how could I forget? You sandbagged me. You screwed me. So we have to assume that they don't go through with busting Rufus, because if you bust Rufus, you're basically busting Fortunato. So they make a decision at some point to, if we're right, kill Rufus, take over, but also not go with Augie. And Augie gets fired because he's unemployed, because they must get him in trouble somehow. So, yes, I agree with you, Luke. We need to see, because the only thing we've seen so far from QB1, you know, Matt Saracen, I'll just list them all off, my homies. But young Roderick, the only thing we've seen so far is him cheating on his wife. Everything else has just seemed like he's like a normal dude. And Madeline's the one being like, yo, get your head out of your ass. And she's the one who's always been like Madeline. So definitely need to see what the change is. And you're right, Luke, there isn't that much time, but I feel like they'll nail it, because they've been able to give us enough for each character each episode. So they'll let us know what happens. And I feel like the turn is going to be when Maddie somehow tells him, whether it's she has to convince him or not. We don't know the Annabelle situation, but she convinces him to not go with Augie and go with a nefarious kill, if we're right.
Yeah.
Well, so let's
switch it up to modern day now. We're back in here and we're going to be a little Pym centric, where he is just laying down all the evidence that they have against Verna, all the pictures that they were, all his, basically his investigation. And we talked a lot about this, like the reveal was like that Maddie didn't really know, like this was the confirmation that she was surprised by seeing Verna as well. And she's starting to put everything together here. And I think this is also the scene where she says, like, oh, did you fuck that bartender? I would have loved the turn for this to be the bartender's kid rather than it being like the devil, because that would have been something we didn't even consider being an option if she was an usher like Verna and Rod's kid. But I doubt it, right? There's not enough time to pull that off, right?
No.
Yeah.
No, I think now.
I like that.
It would be really cool really if she was an usher. Yeah.
It was really cool that this scene happens. I really like that Maddie at first can't really deal with the fact that it may be like, quote unquote, the devil or some kind of supernatural thing. And she's like, you're thinking she's talking about that. And Roddy's like, come on, it's not some little supernatural crazy thing. And she's like, no, you freaking bang this bartender and it could be the daughter that's coming after us. And he's kind of like, oh, shit. And I was like, damn, that would be a cool twist. But
yeah,
I mean, we've seen the supernatural, so we know. So that's the problem. But yeah, it was really cool to have that as a scene because I'm sure it's funny we didn't think about that, but I'm sure there has been theories that like Verna the bartender could have banged Roddy and there's a kid. And it's another usher that might be like going against everyone.
My last thing is just that Madeline is cold as ice. She wants the receipt to be the eyeballs, which is so fucking sick. We've talked about how hot mama's eyes are so crazy too. So it's just interesting that she wants the eyeballs. And then just to go back, because I didn't get to say it, but you know, how do you take your morning coffee in solitude? Like go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I love that.
The grizz. And then the smart girls are only sexy until you realize they don't want to fuck you line. But then even better was the Grizz's line being like, your mother was a full service secretary until her brain rotted and she killed a great man. I'm like, oh, it was just like line after line. Yep. I was like doing a dance. During
another line he said there too, which I wrote down was, I didn't write down the second part, but he basically kept saying, don't fuck with me, Madeline. You can fuck me, but don't fuck with me.
Oh, yeah. She was so awesome. He was awesome. It was just like such a good back and forth. They really were going toe to toe. It was really good.
Yeah.
Just to sneak back, Madeline was talking about, you know, you were sticking your dick in everything at that time. Maybe you fucked a bartender. And again, we're talking about this switch. Like, he was with his wife. Why was it? He wasn't fucking everything. This must have like just happened. So. And we'll still get to that wall scene later, man. We'll get to that wall scene later.
This is going to be the last isolated scenes before the final Vic and Roderick in modern day. So each of the kids are going to get their own individual scenes here. So I'll just lump them all together and we can talk about everything. So Vic has the conversation with Verna, and this is the moment in the episode where she gets all philosophical about her being out of touch with her human side, and the ticking is driving Vic crazy. So this is all escalating. That's probably the one we don't have to say much about because we'll talk about that in the final bucket. The other two scenes are Freddie's scene with Lenore. And then they're talking about, I think they're just like laying out like PR strategies again, like talking about Freddie's being all salty. I didn't take anything away from this scene besides what we already knew and talk about. So if there's anything you want to add there. And then the third one will be Tam getting her scene with Bill and talking about the bodyguard, which there was this weird moment. I guess it was supposed to be Verna when she like opens the door, Tam does, and sees like the girl like walk by. I didn't really understand that. I guess it was just like a creepy moment, but that whole thing with just Tam and Bill, like the freak out and all that stuff.
Tam is just fully hallucinating fucking everything. She's falling asleep. She was like, you were walking around the park with that whore. And he's like, dude, that was you. What the fuck? Yeah. She's missing like full chunks of memory. Yep. And she's like, it's very interesting. The Tam stuff, it's sad because she's just obviously spiraling, but we can really save the Tam stuff for next episode because this is just the beginning of her losing her mind and like kicking Bill out of the house.
Her Bev Keen was shown here.
Oh my God. I can't believe I didn't mention Bev Keen as one of her credits in the first episode. I skipped it.
I didn't want to correct you, but yeah, I noticed that.
I mean, I just missed one. You should have. Bev Keen is her superstar moment. She's fucking incredible in that.
Yeah.
Disrespectful, honestly.
There was a quote I want to bring up, though, in Tam's portion, because I just like her blacking out and like all that stuff. That works really well for me as like a horror element for just all of her scenes. You don't know what's reality and what's not. Like when she blacks out and like has all those notes that are crazy. But Bill has this line where he just says, like, you haven't been sleeping. It's been a long time, like horror movie, long time. And that is like a great just meta break. I thought that was worth bringing up because Bill's a good dude. And he kind of got the short end being married to Tam and her just treating him like dirt.
Their acting is amazing together. Just their fights are so good. Tam, just such a good character. I love him. And like you said, we'll get more into him next episode. That's literally called Goldbug. But to jump back to Vic in the office, when we got Verna when Vic is talking to her, the slurping, chirping noise is just so good. Going back, that's actually how the episode opened up. It's just a black screen and you just hear the slurping and chirping before going into the first scene.
Only someone who saw it twice could.
Totally. 100%. 100%. This is only if you do the classic watch in the middle and then go back to the beginning. Flanagan. Classic. All the true Flanagan fans do this. You just don't know it. But I think we call each other Flannies. Flannies, yeah. We actually call them Gangans, so you obviously aren't in the group. But this almost seemed like another test. Like when Verna comes in, this is Vic's last chance to like prove that she's a good person. Now's your chance. Tell this patient, you know what, maybe this isn't good yet. Maybe we're not ready for human trials. She's given her all the opportunities, but of course Vic's pushing and is like, you know what, we'll go through with it. And that's when she seals the deal, is the way I was taking it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's take it home. Let's take home episode 5 here. And this is just the final two scenes. It starts with Roderick. He is talking with Maddie again, Madeline, and they bring up the deal, or like they talk about the bartender again. And this is something I wrote down because Roderick ends up saying, I never touched her more than Mads did. And I thought that meant like maybe we're going to get a scene where he also kisses her, and that kind of reinforces that theory of that's how the deal happens. And then that also supports all of the stuff that Madeline's saying about, did you stick your dick in her? Like, and he like didn't instantly say no or whatever. So there's something there, I think, maybe. But then we have his whole contemplation of suicide moment where he's like freaking out. Ooh. And he knows that he basically cursed the usher name is what he's kind of like implying. And that's what I took from the scene. So we could talk about that piece. And then, of course, just open the floor for just when Roderick shows up to Vic's house and like that craziness that we get. So I guess we'll stick with that first boardroom scene for when he's in the business spot first.
Dude, him being like, take Ligodone 5 at a time. And then in the later scene when Juno has 47 Ligodones and she's just like, rip, out of control. She's really taking an unprecedented amount of Ligodone. But that was a 10 out of 10 scene. This is like one of the scenes I'm saying that like no one could do it better than Bruce, like stabbing himself. Him with that fucking huge machete. I forget what he calls it.
Funny, man. He's like that
ending next episode. It's so funny. It's a 10 out of 10. But the jump was great. I like the way they did that, like cinematically. But boys, what'd you think?
I just want to go back to say, actually, I forgot to say this because we kind of cut each other off, but I thought that the scene where Augie and Roddy are talking and Vic shows up and, like you said, Luke does her impersonation of Nell, I think that was one of the best scares, quote unquote, of this show. Like, that one actually got me good.
Oh, yeah.
He's phenomenal. And now it's going to be one of those things, 100%, where you can't imagine anybody else being in that role. And Bruce, we talked about in the first couple episodes of this podcast how Midnight Mass, Hamish Linklater, I think his name is.
Yep.
One of the best performances of Flanagan shows. Bruce is a star and he's a top acting performance for any Flanagan show, at least one of the top ones. And going back to what you're saying, Luke, there's nothing cooler to me with these two episodes, whether it's through Roddy or Vic or Tam in the next episode, when you have scenarios where you're hallucinating or you're falling asleep and you're waking up and things are different and anything could be happening at any time and you blink and it's gone. That's like the kind of horror that really interests me. Like, I don't care about like, oh, there's a jump scare. Like, I like where it's like, oh my gosh, she puts her head down and she lifts her head up. And this is episode 6, but there's scribble all over her notes and, you know, crazy shit written there and all that kind of stuff. And it does that a lot with Vic and it does that a lot here with Roddy. And I think it's money.
Mm-hmm. So this is where Rod's, is he talking to the brick wall and saying like, I think I know a way to end it. Should I do it? And then he goes up and then he goes and starts to take the Ligodone. Is that the sequence of events?
Yeah, he basically is just realizing he could kill himself and then it would end the curse.
Yeah, again, to this brick wall, when he is talking to it, assuming, like I already said in theory, you know, Griswold is behind there, or Ruby Griz, and we also hear bells go on, and I was like, okay, the only time I remember bells is Annabelle, and I don't know if I'm pushing that one too much.
I like that.
Like, you know, another reason she could be in there because everything switches. So I love the way he's just talking to him, and he's like, you know what, fuck you too. And then he's like, I'm gonna go do it. And him just talking to himself, and then he doesn't do it. He's like, oh, coward. Like, this performance is just so good. It's so good because he's so with it and together and smart. Like the lempire Lemon monologue was so fucking good. And now you see he's not like, he's not really there.
There's obviously going to be a reveal that someone's standing there or laying there or against the wall and he's talking to them. We don't know who he's talking to right now. I mean, I think that's a reveal that we should be expecting. I almost took it like it was Shackles, not a bell, but I think bell might make more sense based on the sound. I was just taking it like it was Shackles. So in my head, I thought that there was someone shackled against the wall that he's seeing and he's talking to them.
Well, he says
but
bell.
If it's bells, then I'm wrong on that point.
He Next says episode. Bells.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm just saying what I thought I heard. You know, I thought it sounded like shackles, like, you know, chains.
And I'm just saying, I think they're behind the wall and he built that brick wall. And also, there's been so many lines about like somebody's trying to dismantle this firewall. You call your family like brick by brick. Episode one, again, only know this because I had to go back and watch that. Literally opens up with, you know, Pink Floyd's like the wall, like just another brick in the wall. So that there is a constant theme of that. And the imagery of like taking a brick out by killing somebody, hence the fall of Usher, the House of Usher. There just seems like there's a theme going in that direction.
A little Spartacus style, right? With When Badiatis gets his revenge. Yeah, that was a fucking moment.
Sorry, Kathleen.
That's okay. Jimmy, what is Bruce Greenwood's best performance? This show or National Treasure 2?
He's the prez.
He's the best. He's my president. I wish he was the president of the United States, Bruce Greenwood.
If he went for prez, I would vote for him 100%.
Yeah, not a good comparison. It's like this new Flanagan show or the best movie of all time.
Like,
it's unfair.
All right, let's take us home, Luke.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's just talk about open dialogue about the final scene. We hit a bunch of the moments. Like, we already got the owl reveal that happened. I was freaking out when Roderick was starting to hear the ticking, thinking that broke every rule I had about this show. But then it turns out that it's literally pumping Allie's heart in the other room. And this was by far the most gruesome death of this show so far. And I was like, I knew Vic was going to die here. But this was like in a vacuum, like still shocking to watch just her just like go crazy and kill herself. And she was like blasting the music to drown out the ticking. Like, all of this was really done. I do wish we got a little bit more screen time of it building to this point, but this was just like a hit the deep end kind of moment and just crazy.
Amazing reveal, honestly, because like you said, Luke, so much was going through my head once the music comes off and you're fully expecting Roddy to be like, I don't hear it. But then when he says, I do hear it, I'm thinking, okay. Like, so much is going through my head. I'm like, would he have seen the black cat if he walked into Leo's apartment? Or would he would he have seen all these hallucinations? And then obviously we find out that it's because it's real and it's actually pumping her heart in the other room, which is a freaking amazing reveal because of how much it makes you think. And then boom, smacks you right in the face with a horror scene with Allie just up against the wall with her freaking chest open. Crazy.
Three things. One, Allie's noises she was making when the thing hit her in the head on the ground with the bodyguard being like, y'all good in there? And she's just like, so good. Fucking incredible.
You never heard somebody getting eaten out before?
You
perv. Two, not you, the bodyguard. Two is, of course, Roderick's acting as he walks in the room and trying to talk Vic down, being like, you got the funding. It's done. It's yours. Like, trying to like figure out what the fuck is going on in that room. So fucking good. And three is Verna not actually being there this time, whereas the rest of the times she was in the room, this one kind of just happened without her, which I thought was very interesting. It was the first one that she wasn't actually there for.
True.
I mean, she was a part of it. She just wasn't there.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty telling that this is the first death that didn't have Verna, except for the part where she looks to the left and sees the woman walking by, but we don't know that's Verna, but you have to assume.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's not directly involved at all.
I don't know, because like Vic kind of almost seems like she's possessed at very end, right before she stabs herself. She's like, ugh, like, why'd you have to do this? Now I have to like do this myself or something like that. So it almost seemed like Verna did almost possess and or at least lead or speaking through Vic at that point. And
they usually
just
show it.
Yeah. This is totally, you know, a Flanagan group thing. But if you if you watch this and then go back and watch episode one, we do at the three children's funeral, you know, Tammy, Freddie, and Vic, we do get a flash and we do see like all of the kids like kind of like dying almost at their death. And yeah, we saw Vic like stabbing herself, and this was that image, obviously. And it just looks so good because you see it and you're like, how is this going to happen? And it leads to it completely perfectly. And then it happens and you're like, oh my God, it was right there. I should have seen that coming. So it's just so such good writing.
And then, of course, this scene's happening with Vic and Allie, and they're playing Total Eclipse of the Heart. Every now and then again.
Yeah, I loved that, James. All right, okay. That's so episode five. Yeah,
let's move right into episode six. We don't need to waste any time. This is probably going to be a longer one, but we did cover a bunch of things and theories at the top, so that's probably why we're going a little bit longer. And we have to get some of Paul's classic theories in there, too. But Goldbug, this is going to be the Tam-centric episode. We're going to go through the same rinse and repeat cycle of how these episodes have been starting. And this episode kicks off with Tam basically sleepwalking through life. She's losing all of her sense of reality, straight Moon Knight vibes, right? Like she's like blinking in and out and like, it's just Moon Knight. So that's like how we kind of cold open here. And in modern day, Augie is asking the good questions here. Like most of these kids in these stories, they were by themselves. There was nobody there to tell these stories. And then he has that great line, like, how did they tell you, like, before they died? And he goes, no, after, or whatever he says. And that's like a really cool line. But so Augie's starting to be like, what the fuck's going on here? He's starting to connect the supernatural dots a little bit in his head. So we're going to see that play out. Did any want to add anything there? That's just pretty much it for the beginning.
All good.
Okay, so Tam back in her own apartment, like she's going crazy. She starts to see that she sees the gold bug gift and like there was like crazy shit in there and like nothing's there. She has like the conversation with Bill. All of this is just good horror. I think, Jimmy, you were kind of hinting at this earlier. Like we like it. It's really fun because you don't know what the fuck is happening. And she starts breaking down for the first time we've seen in the show. I don't think there's a conversation to be had there. So that's just like the setup for Tam's storyline and her trajectory. But then Roderick has a scene where he's basically talking about this could be theories crafting here, like some sort of breadcrumb trail here where he's talking about like the immortality thing with like the Egyptian goddess and the eyes. This all is like symbolism connecting to Madeline and her story. But this is basically him saying like, you know, the rich can do whatever we want. Am I a god? Like that was a really cool scene. He just has been killing all of his line deliveries. But then Madeline shows up on Pim's orders. Like she's just questioning Pim and basically trying to get some more information about like, where's the ring? Like all these random things that are happening. I don't think there's anything. Am I going too fast? Because I feel like there's nothing really worth talking about yet.
No, it's good. I think Paul had mentioned is like the first time someone did that. Like we're seeing Roddy and he's like in a trance. Like he's not himself. He's being goofy. He's blood all over him. Like it's a crazy visual. It's so fucking cool. But it's like the woman, Roderick, and he's like the board, Madeline, and they're just like not quite on the same page right now. He's like, oh, I'll talk him down, and then later you see him being like, I got this on the phone to the board members. He's in full like businessman mode, and Madeline is on full like this woman. Like what the fuck is going on with this woman? So I think that's like just the main takeaway besides the board stuff. But yeah. It's all good. Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I connected with the sapphires was that Madeline was asking for that woman's eyes, and he gives the whole speech that these are the eyes
of a goddess,
of a god, and I took them and I found them and stuff like that. So just really, I'm just, feels like it's hyping it up for a really good finale, and I'm so excited to get it all connected.
Yeah, my only notes are just the delivery. Phenomenal. Mm-hmm. My goodness.
So I'll keep going then, because then there's some scenes coming up that we'll probably be able to talk a little bit more about. Lenore's starting to get all sketched out by Freddie and his erratic behavior. She goes and tells Roderick this too. And this is when Roderick was really feeling himself. But let's move on to the Juno scene. I almost said Anya. Good. Anya? Right?
Yeah, it was Anya.
Yeah.
Right in the heart. This one hurts.
We're going to combine the Juno waking up scene. And then, of course, like later, Tam shows up and they have that weird moment too. So whatever you guys want to bring up there, because Juno really has, I don't know what the punch is going to be for her, but there's something that's building up to. And we did get to see her take like fucking 50 pills, which was wild. She's like the breakfast of champions. Whatever she said.
She's purely comedic relief, man. Yeah, she's excellent.
Never would have thought her in this role would have been like funny.
Yeah.
I mean, it's devastating, though, too, at the same time. That conversation that she has with Tam, where she's saying, I had no family, and I thought that joining the Usher family, you guys are a big family, and I'm going to have finally a family, and I guess I was getting in over my head. I can't believe I would think that, and you're waiting for Tam. She seems at first like she's feeling bad, and then she just says, like, oh, at least she does say for a second, like, he never answers his phone for anybody. It's not you. But then she's basically like, all right, if you hear from him, you know, give me a call, let me know. And then leading that to the fact that she thinks that Tam's talking to her when she's talking to Verna. My gosh, like, that hurts. Yeah. You know, she said, I'm just here to support you. I'm just here to support you. You know, oh, my gosh. And then she throws the freaking microphone stand at her face.
Yeah, is she okay? What do you guys think? She's got to be okay.
She's immortal, man. She's got 50 pills of Ligodone in her. She could take that shit and jump right back up.
I always had in the back of my mind that she was in on it somehow. Like, she talks about how she met Roddy and, oh, you were the founder of this pill. I love you so much. I could blow you like that. I don't know, like, if that was like a whole setup to meet, but there's something definitely going on in the background behind Gino. At least I had that in the back of my head. So, you know, if we start next episode and she's dead, I'm going to sound so stupid right now.
It can't be. It can't be. There needs to be a reason. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like Juno doesn't even get a bodyguard. Like, it seems like nobody gives a fuck about her. It's so sad. She's the best. I love her. Ruth Cott is crushing it in this role. That's all I have to say. But my other thing is, quickly, with the whole Freddie Lenore thing, like, Freddie's losing his mind. He's going insane. He's absolutely, I have notes like, Freddie's going to absolutely torture her. And then we obviously get that later, but just quickly, like, after they see the death of Vic and Allie on the TV, just like Juno had, he tells Lenore, like, none of them were right in the head, man. And they're not barely even Usher. So just fuck them. Like, he's really just coked out of his brain. Like, he's not even trying to save bowling, face man. For Lenore. Yeah. The bowling is so good. He's crazy. It's funny.
He gets a spare and he is loving it.
Is he injecting his wife with, like, that experimental nightshade that they were kind of talking about?
So I took it.
Incredible. Yeah. Incredible guess. I didn't think of that. I was going to ask you what you guys thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
We can just skip to that. You want to talk to that real quick? Basically, it's right after Lenore. Lenore does visit Roddy at one point, and he kind of just, like, you know, it's like, everything's fine. You're fine. I will never let anything hurt you. Like, you're good. Lenore wants to stay home with her. He won't let her. That's why I'm like, he's going to torture her. And then this is when they were watching the movies and everything, whatever. But then Freddie just ends up ripping coke and, you know, poisoning her. There's not really much else to say, but except that he wants her to be able to see and hear him. So I'm wondering, well, I thought he was going to do something real gruesome, like fuck someone in front of her, or like,
he will. Next episode, something's happening.
Oh, God.
So, you know, that obviously Lenore was so surprised when her mom starts talking. She says, like, oh, she's talking. Like, earlier, mm-hmm. she was just literally couldn't even move. And she was poisoned earlier, too. And it wore mm-hmm. off, because he says last one lasted like 6 hours or something. So
crazy.
It's an ongoing thing. It's obviously not the first time he does it. Yeah. It's going to be a crazy next episode for Freddie.
I'm really excited for that one.
Yeah.
Okay. So anything else you wanted to add, Kathleen or Paul? You good?
Nope. I'm all good.
Okay, a couple quick scenes here, too, before we move into another big one. Pym does the Pym thing. He's the Pym Reaper. He goes into the crime scene, cleans it all up, does his own thing. He takes the laptop, whatever. The stuff he's been doing at every crime scene.
He takes everything.
Yeah, literally. He's like,
Fortunato property.
They're literally like, oh, that knife is Fortunato property. And he's like, yep.
That's tech. That's Fortunato high tech. Like, that's, yeah, okay.
The power he holds, for real.
It's awesome.
And then after that one is Maddie gets a solo scene where she's like talking about the algorithms again, the consciousness mapping, Westworld. That's all I can think of.
That last scene with Arthur Pym, what was important there is he took the folders that was in Vic's office that was about the patient and the human trials, which was Verna, and which had her license ID and everything.
And that perfectly connects to this. After the consciousness mapping, Pym ends up bringing up the patient file, and the address on there was the childhood home, which was that's a awesome. Cool, like, that felt Haunting of Hill House E, like, with like everything's back to the original house or something like that. But okay, so this is, again, continuing on the Pym thing. This is a big Pym scene in the modern day where Augie and Rod are talking. And I have a theory connected to this too, where kind of, it's worth talking about, I guess. They talk about Pym's past, how he was a badass. Like, he basically went on a worldwide expedition, did all these things to circumnavigate the globe when he was younger. And it's just Roderick basically giving him some clout. Like, yo, he can do everything. Like, he's a badass. He got whatever we needed done. And one thing that they said through his little spiel about Pym, they said, I think it was in the North Pole, they found an island called Ultima Thule, where he goes on to say that it was basically a place outside of time and space. I don't know if that's like, you know, symbolism or whatever, but this sparked a connection to the earlier episodes. If you guys remember, when Hot Mama is like having that weird scene in the bar, it might've been like episode 2 where it just like cuts to her and she's saying like, we're outside of time and space right now. Mm-hmm. So I originally thought, did Pym make a deal with Verna as well? Ooh. But I don't think that plays out because he's so shocked at seeing her everywhere in all these pictures.
True.
But there was something there because that's the second time that Flanagan used outside of time and space. And that just feels way too much of a coincidence for not to mean anything. I just don't get why Pym wouldn't have been showing that he knew a little bit more about Verna if he did actually meet her in his like younger days. But is there anything there, or am I just grasping at straws?
No, 100% agree. I was getting that Verna is in the Ultimate Thule. She is part of these. They called them like real beings. And they also said the earth was hollow and they live beneath us, but they also talk about the island up north. But and it's almost like, I think the ring that they keep showing on Verna, like maybe that's the symbol of the Ultima Thule. Like, you're one of those immortal beings, because they always show that ring on her with the big point. And then what you were talking about outside time and space, I think there's a connection with every time one of the kids talks to Verna, they are isolated and in a room. And going back, it could be them. Well, they're not isolated here, but in the bar, we already know that bar doesn't exist. So that could have been them outside of time and space, just in that mm-hmm. bar. Then you go to Prospero, and when he's talking to Verna, he's in that red room when she takes off the mask and nobody else is there. So that might be out of time and space. For Leo, when he goes and talks to her at the pet store, that could be that his location, like outside of time and space, because that cat also didn't have a name tag, by the way. I don't know if you guys talked about that.
You're such a cat man.
My God. It was brutal watching all that. And this could be more going for like the cage with Camille back in there when she's talking to her in there, or the bedroom with Tammy as well. Like, this all could be locations outside of time and space.
Kind of like that.
Yeah, I like it too. I think that there's more answers for Pym that we need to find out, because Pym does say, I would be nothing without Roddy. And we don't really have that yet, because Roddy's making it seem like he was a big dog, even as young as 25. So we don't know where he meets Roddy, and Roddy makes him become something. Nothing without Roddy doesn't sound like it makes sense to what Roddy's story is about Arthur back even when he was 25 going on a world expedition. So I'm sure there's more to find out about Arthur, but I do like the outside time and space thing, because whether you're right, Paul, or whether you're right, Luke, where it is being brought up and it's being said multiple times, mm-hmm. and there's a reason for it, I feel like. Also, just want to give Mark Hamill some more props. We all know that he's the man with voice acting, too. He's the Joker. He's the GOAT when it comes to that. But this is not Mark Hamill's voice. This Arthur voice that he chooses is money. Like, it is so mm-hmm. good. Mm-hmm. I love it. He is so ominous. You could tell he's a badass. You should be scared of him. He's a human in this whole entire supernatural scenario where you see Verna and this and that, but they're scared of Arthur.
Dropping the photos and being like, I don't think they're fake. And this tracks back to 1901, shows Verna with Zuckerberg and everything like that. Fucking mm-hmm. hysterical. And they show everybody. It is so, so funny.
Let's just use that as the jumping off for that scene. There's another scene we'll talk about after. But yeah, like, the cool line that kind of leads up to this is Augie says, like, did he end up finding her? And then Roderick says, we sent Arthur Gordon Pym. Of course he found her. And it's just like a cool little moment for him, just more clout. So yeah, we're in the Fortunato, I guess, and Pym's given all the evidence, just like Paul was hinting at. Just amazing to see like those huge celebrities. Like, did Zuckerberg sign off on that? Or like, how's that fucking
work? Yeah, Trump, right? Rockefeller, Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
I thought the best part of all of this was that the bar was never a bar. The address mm-hmm. was like 5 miles away, and they said they had walked, and Madeline was like, more like 5 minutes. So wherever they had gone to that night wasn't even like a real fucking place, which is just so cool, which is the same thing of like outside of time and space, right? We just mm-hmm. talked about that, which is that, like, when he said that, I was like, yeah, now we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to what I was saying in the last podcast episode where Maddie goes to where she thinks the bar was. And you were saying, Kathleen, like, was it torn down and now it's not the bar anymore? And I was like, it doesn't even look like it was supposed to be anything except the wall with the raven. And you obviously see in a lot of the flashbacks this episode, again, Roddy's looking at the raven. They specifically have the conversation about the raven. But I'm glad we get this reveal because when I saw this, I'm like, it looks like just the wall. And I'm thinking of like, this is stupid, but I'm thinking of like Introduction to the Magicians.
I thought that too. 100%.
But yeah, so we cover the Magicians. And if you guys haven't seen it, please watch it because it's freaking phenomenal.
I mean, what can we name all the places we've seen the Raven, like the graffiti here, the Raven in the bar with the Raven right when he passed out outside the church and he like looks up in early episode one. And what is that? Is that just representing his death coming or?
An Edgar Allan Poe thing.
Edgar Allan Poe thing.
They had the line in the bar like he says, "Oh, I thought ravens were bad luck because Noah threw them out of the ark and they still survived the flood, but some other people see them as good luck and good fortune." So just waiting for that to tie in.
Yeah. I also pitched the Magicians to a friend last night, sold it, so that's a coincidence. But yeah,
fucking love that. Okay, so next we get like this little Roderick scene when he's downstairs and Goldbug's about to drop and Madeline slaps him in the face. But basically, Madeline's like, what the fuck are you doing down here? And he's like, I'm listening. You think the kids are just telling all this, ripping the stories down there to him? Like, this is what he means when he's saying, like, the kids are telling me the stories? Because, like, you were saying you're waiting for the reveal of people to be, like, listening to him, like, when he was doing that little, like, kind of suicide thing. But I mean, we do get a bunch of reveals of the four of them just sitting there staring at him. So I don't know that we're going to get a reveal of it being anyone else unless it's Annabelle and the Grizz. We'll see. But so far, we've gotten those reveals. But that's anything else on that specific scene of them in the basement?
This is just where he says, do you hear that? Bells.
Yeah.
Right. Gets slapped and was like, get your shit together.
And now it's the Tam show.
Yeah, I was going to say there's one other thing that happens before we just do Tam for the rest of this is the breaking into the file room. I think we didn't say that yet. Young Roderick breaks in to starts making copies of all the forgery files. And that's going to be a future plot point. Probably nothing to bring up there.
How could you ever want to get rid of Annabelle, man? I mean, obviously Maddie would, but I'm just saying, how would you ever want to cheat on her? She's so supportive. He's literally having this conversation with him where she's like, do you think this is for a good reason? And he's like, yeah. She's like, then I'm proud of you. Like, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, she's so nice to him.
Gonna make it that much
more
devastating.
You're such a sucker, man.
Yeah, she's dying. Two big chunk scenes here. And it's all Tam related. And we are going to start at the actual Goldbug launching event. And then, Jim, you brought this up earlier. And I didn't understand why Maddie said the line that all men want to do is they want to fuck. And then right before they die, they want to fuck. Like, why did she say that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it comes right after she says, men, all they want to do is have kids. She's talking about the fact that first, you don't miss Bill. You think you miss him. You think you're hurt, but you're not hurt. You're going to be fine ASAP. You're going to find the next. And then she says, you know, I had my ex-husband. I thought I missed him. What an idiot I was. And then boom, I don't give a shit anymore. He just wanted to have kids. And that was important to me because we've been saying this entire time, you know, she doesn't have kids like Roderick to punish her with. If she ended up having kids, you would assume that Werner would probably be taking them out too because they're ushers. So I think that the having kids thing was just an extension. That line that you were saying, Luke, is extension of that. So I didn't really take it anything other than the fact that she's just like, we don't need men. Kind of thing.
Huge scene for me because this scene, of course, my mind went racing and sprouted a whole new theory. So none of the Usher kids have kids besides Freddie. And we know that his wife could potentially go on out and cheat. So I had the theory maybe that wasn't actually his daughter. And if that was true, then none of the Ushers would have kids, thinking like maybe there's a connection where they can't have kids for some reason, like any of the Usher kids. And I don't know if that stems
like
back to the...
You can't continue the Usher line, pretty much, that you're saying. Like,
yeah.
And Lenore might not actually be part of the Usher line. That's interesting.
Make her safe. Yeah. Tam. She has that cool moment where she sees Verna giving the presentation on behalf of her, but it wasn't her. It was herself she was seeing, I guess, because she's doing the whole fucking with reality stuff. But this is just we could talk about whatever we want here. The kink sex video, the throwing the mic stand at Juno, Madeline actually like doing a cool like scout out, like looking for Verna in this situation. And I think she even goes on to find her later and she grabs her. And when she disappears, she has like all this like black, like soot on her hand is what I took it as. So this was just the moment before the death. And of course, shit had to hit the fan for Tam because she looked like a psycho up there. So.
Paul, sexiest scene. Let's hit it. Talk to me about the sex scene, Paul.
Dude, I loved it. All right. You're going to be eating her ass while she's reading a book. I'm like, God damn, Tammy, you got some very specific interests. You and Camille, like back in that, you know, right? Episode 3 or whatever, you got some very specific needs.
Yeah.
So,
seriously. Interesting. Lick her armpits?
Yeah. What the fuck? Yeah. I mean, that's an essential, right? That's just
the bum is an upcharge, she says. You gotta watch that scene with the subtitles, because so like if you're not watching with subtitles, you might miss what they say, but it's literally like the bum is an upcharge, all this good stuff. It's great.
And then later on, just I'm not gonna talk too much about it, but when Tammy's back in her house with the, you know, fire stick and fire poker, you hear Verna say, you know, you sure you don't want Bill? He's eating this whole lot of ass for you. Like, he's a good guy. Yeah. It's like such a good line. But do you think that she just saw all this? Like, the sex tape wasn't actually up there. Verna wasn't actually in the slides. No, so she's just
correct.
Okay. Just wanted to.
Right.
And we see the woman sitting behind Juno. She is in the same dress, kind of like the green dress that Tammy is seeing Verna as.
Yep.
But she's okay. So she's just picturing all this.
I think it's so badass that Verna, as like this devil spirit, was just like looking Madeline in the eye and just like letting this all happen. Like, you know, you caused this, and just disappears on cue. Like, the scene was great. Cause this is, I actually really like that Madeline's trying to actually make progress, and it's not just like waiting around for shit to happen to her eventually. And she's like scouting everything. So I thought everything with Maddie was good in this scene.
Yeah, it was like secondhand embarrassment to the max. Just as soon as she comes through the curtains, what the hell are you doing here? Also, like I already brought up the fact that she sees Verna behind Juno and says, what the F are you doing here? And everyone's just like, what the hell is going on? And then you can see like when she looks back and she sees Verna and then she sees the sex tape, she's looking at the assistant. The assistant's just like using her gold bug makeup like nothing's going on because it's just totally all in her head. It's just wild. And then, Luke, what you're saying is once she starts messing up and saying, like, what the hell are you doing here? You could see Madeline immediately puts her glasses on. She starts looking in the crowd because she's looking for Verna and she's not there, but she sees her to the side. It's just money. I mean, this is just so secondhand embarrassing, awkward.
Dude,
this,
so bad.
This is amazing.
You know, I was dying here, Luke.
Yeah, Paul's like, weakness.
I hate secondhand embarrassment. I get embarrassed for people so easily. So I literally, by reflex, hit like the fast forward arrow like 3 times because I didn't want to see it. And I was like, no, you got to watch it, bro. So I had to go back and I watched all of it. And it sucks.
Podcaster.
It sucked. But also, yeah, at the same time, finally, Madeline's like catching on, like, I'm going to be there. And she's looking for her. Poor Juno, like, what the fuck are you doing here? I thought be supportive. Like, she's,
I love Juno. Justice for Juno.
And then just freaking blasting her with the microphone stand. My God.
Nailed her with the base of it. It was perfect toss.
The only thing I have to add is that the actual death scene, like with all the mirrors and stuff, and you know, like earlier we kind of skipped over that she was like crunching her feet for Roderick and Augie scene, and she was like kind of the bent neck lady at one point. And the mirrors in the room make total sense, like up above, all around. You know, she likes the sex stuff, so people with mirrors on their ceiling are, it's mostly for sex stuff, right? Like, why else would you have a mirror on your ceiling? But the physical mirror, like going through her back and then going through her neck, was, again, crunchy ASMR heaven for me, and I loved it.
So we're going to keep talking about it, but this is the end, right? Like, Kathleen, you already, you said the ending. There were like 3 great lines here. I thought this was some of Hot Mama's best line delivery of the season when she says, you absorbed your twin in the wound. That's fucking hardcore. She's like gassing her up, like saying she's crazy. And I think later on, like, Tam says, fuck you. And she goes, it's a little too late for that now, don't you think?
Yeah.
So like, she's like just hitting all these great lines. And then also the actual line of sustenance here was Verna says that she confirms again that the death has nothing to do with her. And it's basically just implying that this is all because of Rod's curse. You could have done this easier, just like Leo and Perry, like all of them had the option to die easier, but she didn't because of her, whether it's the 7 deadly sin or just because they're terrible people, they get this crazy death.
Yeah.
I think there's a few notes that I want to bring up that I forgot. I love the scene where she freaks out at Bill again in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And then she says, basically, like, leave your keys. And then she thinks she's saying, I'm so sorry. Shit's going crazy. I need you. And then, boom, like, it blinks and you see the key on the table. I was like, damn, that's crazy. Whether he was there or not, I don't even freaking know. But he left his key and left. And then again, in this scene, she's smashing mirrors, trying to go after Verna. And Verna's disappearing. And she's like, you're wasting time here. Again, like, basically what you were alluding to, like, you can take this time to finally chill, or you could keep being crazy. You're delaying the inevitable, but you're wasting time smashing mirrors.
Yeah, and you know, all the scenes that we've seen of her talking to Bill earlier on in the episodes, they did show the mirrors there. Like, even the headboard of the bed was a mirror. Like, we've all seen this before, so it's not like they just threw it at us. So it's great that they incorporated, even going back to episode one, the little flash of her that we got in the church was like, I thought it was shards of glass falling around her. And it had a green tint to it too, because each flash had a different tint to like how they all died. So it was, it just comes together so well. And I thought it was such a good, horrible, horrible visual, but good visual of the slow motion bounce mm-hmm. and the mirror glass that's already on there and going back up. It was intense.
We also get the reveal that Bill doesn't like these hookers. You know, he doesn't like doing this, but he does it for Tam. And we alluded to that last episode. We were guessing that, we were wondering, I guess, if he actually likes it or if he doesn't like it. And he says he hates it. He loves Tam. And then she's just like the meanest person in the world.
Is Bill even going to be in this, like, from here on out?
No.
You know,
I mean, if they show her funeral, he might be in that. But otherwise, yeah, he's done.
One very small thing. Camille just low-key actually getting into Goldbug and, like, doing the punches and stuff and wearing Bill gear, like, episode four. Thought that was fucking hysterical. Just thought she was a joke, and then she was actually getting to do it. But if this is the end of Bill, it seems like everything's kind of wrapped up there.
Yeah.
How did a fitness enthusiast not create Bill if their name is Bill? Come on, that is money. That's marketing central.
Great brand name. I think that's it, right, guys? Nothing else to bring up?
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, the next thing we watch will be 7-8. So we'll have all of our answers. I'm pumped. Like, after 3 and 4, I was like, yeah, not that I wasn't excited to watch the next ones, but after 5 and 6, I'm fucking pumped to see 7-8. I think 2 and 3 were just like a little lull for me. Mostly four, I would say. Yeah, four was probably
3 and 4, you mean?
Yeah, just 4, really. 3 was good, and then I thought 4 was a little bit of a lull, which is unfortunate because that was my boys' episode.
It's episode 1 for me, the Black Cat. I literally thought the show opened up with Raul Coley saying, I'm looking for some pussy. You're like, I thought that was the start of the show, and I thought he was like the main character.
I wish.
So the only theories,
what a great show. Let's create that show.
Yeah, the only theories or things I'm looking forward to that we still don't know is just where Rod got Ligadone from. He says, like, I don't own it. We already know he doesn't own it. He didn't make it. He says, I wish I never stumbled upon it. So in a way, maybe he's seen Verna before and made the deal with, and that's how he first got Ligadone in the first place. So that's when he kind of made a deal with her. And then later on, Madeline made the deal in the bar when they made the kiss, because it goes on, would you rather be famous or rich? And maybe it goes along with that. So how he got Ligadone and started all that. Looking forward to that. And obviously, what's behind the wall? We already know my theory. I think he killed everybody. Annabelle, Rufy Grizz, and his secretary. I think they're all behind that wall at the bottom of Fortunato.
All right. Paul, the only problem I have with what you just said is that wouldn't he recognize Verna if he went to the bar, if he already had seen her before?
Yeah, I think he does. And I think he pretends that he doesn't.
Just doesn't want to say it. Okay, that's like interesting.
Because he's like a married and family guy. But yeah, I don't know. I just kind of had that.
Okay. Before we go, let's just throw a couple things on the board here. Okay. So real quick, rapid fire. What happens to Annabelle? Does she... Like, what's the deal? Just give me a quick theory. Yeah, but how?
By her husband. Husband kills her. Roderick kills her. And she's in the basement of Fortunato.
Yeah, I'm on the same page. Just, I think Madeline was in on it, too.
Yeah, my original guess from episodes ago was that Madeline kills her. So I'll stick with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my guess is either going to be I'm going to go with kills her, or because Roddy goes bad, she leaves him or I mean, she's dead, right? So maybe she kills herself, but whatever. So either way, I'm going to go. I think it's the Maddie thing. I think deep down, Maddie's, she thinks that Annabelle is making Roddy a softy, so she kills. Mm-hmm. Okay, Rufy Grizz, you think he is what they're hiding or running from the night of the 1979 going into 1980?
Something with him.
Mm-hmm. He's dead behind the wall.
And then finally, what's the deal with the basement? Do you have any guesses before we get to the finales or the finale last two episodes?
You're talking about his childhood home in present time.
Where Augie says, what's that noise? And it's important to note that Augie hears it. So there actually is something down there. And Roddy says it's Maddie, which is ridiculous because it's a shitty ass old home. Why would she be in the basement?
Yeah. My only guess is that she did kind of get what she wanted. Like, if you're making a deal with the devil, like, yeah, I want to live forever. You can live forever, but that doesn't mean you're going to live well. Like, maybe she did kind of like a curse. Like, yeah, you can live forever, but like, you're basically bedridden and you can't like do anything. Or maybe something happened where she's in an accident and yeah, she can somehow live forever, but she has maybe has the heart.
So you
thing
think
on.
She's down there? Like, yeah, you think she's down there in like a hospital bed or something?
Maybe not even a hospital bed. Maybe she's like a freaking cage. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that's
there.
Cool. I mean, it sounds like that. I'm not against that, Paul.
It's actually Lenore down there with Maddie's consciousness inside, and she's
right,
calling from
saying.
Downstairs. And then he's just dicking in the calls until the right moment.
That's pretty much unironically what I was going to say. Something around that. Because like the phone call and the basement have to be connected and Lenore's going to be involved too. So nothing in these two episodes made me expand or change any of that stuff.
So my last question, which will get into my theory, is do you think that Roddy and Maddie will throw down at all before the end of the show? Or do you think that they'll just both meet their ends as just Roddy and Maddie? Like, do you think they'll headbutt at all, or do you think it's just
option two? Just gonna... I don't think they're fighting.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not sure.
I think they're just gonna
all right. Yeah, I don't really know what the deal is downstairs with Maddie. I mean, I feel like maybe if they're fighting, then maybe Roddy has her prisoner down there. But like, why are they fighting? We don't have any indication that they'd be fighting yet, but we do know that again, she's heartless, or I think she's heartless, and it could be that he finds that out the hard way at some point. But I don't know. I'm just excited to figure it out.
She wants some of the cognac, the expensive cognac they're drinking, and Roddy won't give her any. And that's why she's locked up in the basement.
I want some of that. Are you kidding me? $1 million sip? Give me that.
Hell yeah.
$1 million sip, man. Jeez.
Hell yeah.
That's the end? Roddy literally threw a full glass of cognac across the room and just threw $4 million away like that. It's fucking sick. I'll take $1 million and be happy, but... All right, that's the episode. We'll be back and we'll know all the answers by 7 and 8. Go talk to us on our Discord. We loved Alicia. You crushed. Thank you for sending that in. If you have anything to say, Discord us, tweet at us, Instagram at BingeTownTV. You can send us an email at BingeTownTV@gmail.com. We'll read it all on the pod. We love interacting. So come hit us up. Come hang. Also hit subscribe. If you're listening on the Fall of the House of Usher specific feed, then hit subscribe and then go to our BingeTown main feed and subscribe to that on Apple or Spotify, wherever as well, because we've got plenty of stuff going on. We're doing Gen V, which is fucking lit. It's one of my favorite episodes to watch during the week, week to week so far. We're doing Survivor as well. We just finished up Wheel of Time and One Piece. So go watch that and then go listen to that and go watch The Magicians and listen to our season 5 coverage because it's the best show of all time. We are BingeTown TV. And turn around every now and then.
Every now and then I get a little nervous.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network. You're listening to the Geekscape Network.